Welcome to Medically Speaking, Auburn's own medical radio show with host Dr. Mark Vaughn of the Auburn Medical Group and Larry Finney.
Yes, welcome to Medically Speaking Radio with your host, Dr. Mark Vaughn, and...
And I'm Larry Finney.
And we are glad that you came to join us for getting all of your health care information, medical information for the whole Foothills area. Today, we're going to have Dr. Gurvinder Shahid from North Cal Hematology Oncology speaking about modern chemotherapy. Before that, though, we'd like to get into a little bit of...
Seasonal news.
Seasonal news.
What season is it?
Well, I can't say that it's flu season, but it is flu shot season. We try to do that a little bit before flu season.
So as to prevent flu season.
Yeah, that's it.
There you go.
So the big news today, the big word on flu vaccination for the flu season is pregnancy.
Pregnancy. Now, there are certain risk groups or people who are at risk, particularly at risk of not of catching the flu, but of suffering more greatly than others should they happen to catch flu. And that would be amongst them are...
Infants.
And pregnant women.
And pregnant women.
Now, what do pregnant women... What is the relationship between pregnant women and infants?
They go together.
Right. One begets the other.
Correct.
But you can't vaccinate an infant.
No, you can't vaccinate under 6 months of age.
But you can vaccinate the mom while she's still pregnant.
And it actually gives protection to baby. So we're encouraging everyone who's pregnant right now to get into their doctor or get into the drugstore, wherever. If I'm their doctor, come in and get vaccinated against flu.
Now, I'll bet there are some who will say, well, wait a minute now. Is there a danger to my unborn baby if I get this flu shot?
The actual risk is if they get influenza while pregnant. That would be bad.
That would be even worse than whatever imaginary risks you might be able to conjure up.
And when people are pregnant, not only is it bad for the infant, it's worse for them too, the parent, the mom.
Okay. So do you offer these flu shots here, Doc?
We offer them at our office, all of our patients, and we encourage people to get them either there or if they're not our patient, get them anywhere. They even have them at drugstores. Okay. We do need to cut it pretty short here and get back into our disclaimer and everything because we do have a very long show with Dr. Shahid. So let's go.
But it's an interesting show.
It is. So let's go to the break.
Few things in life are harder than thinking about serious illness or the death of someone you love. Research confirms that Americans want the basic services that hospice provides, care at home or in a home-like setting. Treatment that preserves a sense of dignity and respect. Emotional and spiritual support for patients and for their families, and effective pain management. Hospice helps patients and their families deal with end-of-life challenges in a life-affirming, compassionate way that brings dignity, hope, and love to every day of life. This message of love and caring is the focus of hospice care. This message is brought to you by Sutter Auburn Faith Hospice. We can be reached at 886-6650 or click on the link for Sutter Auburn Faith Hospice on the Medically Speaking Radio website.
Larry, have you ever been to Auburn Drug Company?
Yeah, that's the one with the marble soda fountain at 815 Lincoln Way.
Yeah, right there in front they have the marble fountain, and in back is an independently owned pharmacy right here in Auburn.
And that thing has been around for a long time.
Since the 1800s. They are so great because they actually fill your prescriptions when you ask them to, unlike the chain drug stores that make you wait.
You know, and waiting there wouldn't be a big crime because, heck, you could always go to the soda fountain. That's Auburn Drug Company at 815 Lincoln Way in downtown Auburn. Give them a call at 885-6524.
Now, back to Medically Speaking with Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney.
Welcome back from the break. This is Medically Speaking Radio, your source for medical information in the foothills. And as promised, we do have Dr. Gurvinder Shahid of North Cal Hematology Oncology as our guest. Dr. Shahid, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Mark, and thanks, Larry.
I think the last time we spoke with you was about the cancer scare.
Right.
Do you have any update on that, how things are going, that you want to share with the surrounding area in Foothills?
Just a reminder, listeners, we're talking about Dr. Shahid's own personal cancer scare in which he thought that he may have been afflicted.
Yeah, that was I discovered a big tumor in my thigh, and initially thought it was cancer. Eventually, testing and after surgery, I found out it was not, but there was still a remote possibility. So my plan was, and I discussed with my surgeon to get another scan, which I got in July, and thank God it's clean. But I've been advised to get another one in 6 months to make sure that it stays clean, and that's what my plan is. So I would say so far, so good.
Okay, that's good to hear. And actually, a lot of our mutual patients have heard that show and talked to me. I don't know if they've talked to you about it, but
yes, they did, actually.
Yeah. So they're interested to hear how you're doing, too.
Right.
Today's topic, though, is kind of along the lines of treatment of cancer.
Correct.
Specifically, what are you giving to us today?
Well, what I thought about talking about today was more and more we are doing is personalized treatments in oncology. I mean, for a long time, we were just using cookie-cutter approaches to cancer. If somebody's diagnosed with cancer, we used to just clump them, okay, this is a breast cancer, this is a colon cancer. And then we found out that not everybody does the same. Some people do good with one treatment, some people do better with another treatment, or some people don't do any better even if we give them the treatment or don't give them the treatment. So the science has been refined to understand the disease better and to come up with the treatments based on the characteristics of that particular cancer cell. So we are looking at a cellular level to further identify what's the best approach would be. And that also has translated into people living longer and having better responses to treatment.
When you talk about this customization of treatment, the word designer drugs comes to mind. I don't know that's quite what you're saying, though. When I think of designer drugs, I think of taking something from the patient and customizing the treatment to them. But is it that truly customizing to the patient, or is it more finding which of six or seven categories the patient fits into?
Actually, both. We're doing both now. We are looking at if somebody is diagnosed with cancer to find out the drugs which we already have, are they going to work better or not, or even if they are going to have more side effects from one drug or another drug. And now actually we are also customizing new drugs as well. Most recently, there's a drug for prostate cancer in which what they do is they take out the infection-fighting cells, the white cells from a person with prostate cancer. Then we send them out to a lab, they along with the prostate tissue, prostate cancer cells. So they train those cells against that prostate cancer. Basically, they're developing a super vaccine. Not developing, they've developed a super vaccine. Then we inject those back in the person, and it fights, your own immune system fights the prostate cancer.
So we're sending the white cells to white cell boot camp, essentially.
Yeah, we're beating them up to do the job.
Okay, all right.
And you actually use the word vaccine because we're getting the person's own immune system to do the work?
Yes. The term I use, a vaccine, is to, because the principle is similar to a vaccine. What is a vaccine? Vaccine is when we give a killed or a semi-killed virus, inject that to a person and let their immune system get trained to it. Cancer is a different virus, if I may call it a virus. The way it works is it doesn't, the traditional vaccines do not do the job. And we have an example in melanoma where we've tried the vaccines and have not really worked. So here they take it a step beyond the vaccine. They're trying to build not literally antibodies, but train your own cells to fight that infection. So that's, I would say, second generation or third generation vaccines. Vaccine is a principle that using your own immune system to kill that, or you can call them immunotherapy. Your own immune system is treating you.
Now, you'd said earlier that this is divided up into three topics: diagnosis, treatment, and what was the other one?
And the other is looking at the side effect, if somebody's going to have side effects from one drug or another.
So to start with diagnosis, how is this used in diagnosis, this technology?
You can think of it this way. To solve a problem, you need to understand a problem. So what they did is you have a cancer. So we were looking at some people doing better, some people doing worse. With the same size of the tumor, same age group, so two people are totally different. Give them one treatment, one person does fine and next person doesn't do fine. So they started to learn more about that cancer cell. So they went down to a cellular level and actually now even further to a gene level. So and try to understand those cells. So they came up with different characteristics on those cancer cells, which are helpful in identifying them better. One example is, which is an old historical one, we've been using this for a long time, is a breast cancer. Breast cancer has a spot on them where estrogen hormone, which is produced by the females, attaches and makes the cancer grow. So this has been around for decades, and that's the first example of using this technology in identification. And what we do is sometimes we see somebody, they have cancer spread out everywhere and we don't know where it started. So the pathologist tries to look for that estrogen receptor on that. And when they see that the receptor is there, we say, okay, it probably started from breast and maybe the cancer was too small in the breast and spread already. We were not able to find the original tumor, but it is going to behave like a breast cancer and we treat it like breast cancer. So we've understood the problem, came up with a solution targeted to that problem, so we get the right result. So that's where the diagnostic is helpful. Same thing with lymphomas. We just use the term lymphoma, and for a long time we just had one kind of lymphoma, Hodgkin's lymphoma. Then came another one. Oh, some people don't do the same as the Hodgkin's person does. We came up with the terminology non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So, okay, one is Hodgkin's, another is not. At that time, oncology was in infancy. We didn't have too many drugs, so we didn't know too much about cancer. So we were just simplistic. Since then, we've learned so much, even in lymphoma, that non-Hodgkin lymphomas, now we have 62 different kinds of non-Hodgkin lymphoma and counting. And each of them behaves differently. Many of them are treated differently. So it's important for me to know which exact lymphoma this is. So they look for the markers on those lymphoma cells, and different lymphoma cells have different markers, and we can come up with an answer looking at that cancer cell to see, okay, this is a low-grade lymphoma, this is a high-grade lymphoma, and among the high-grade, this is this type of lymphoma, so this drug may work better. Or in this person, I need to treat them right away. Or this one, I can wait and watch and treat them when it's a problem. So you are able to come up with not only prognostic, which is how the person's going to do, but also come up with a tailorized treatment. So that's important for me. No matter what I treat, unless I know the right diagnosis, it's not going to work.
So you mentioned breast cancer and lymphoma, where we're checking these markers, which I guess essentially, it's a protein that grows on the outside of the cell. Is that what it is?
That's what it is. Breast cancer and the lymphomas have been the pioneer in this. Now we've taken that technology over to colon cancer. We've taken it over to gastric cancer, lung cancer, pancreatic cancer. More and more cancers are coming abroad. Colon cancer is another example. For breast cancer, yes, we had that simplistic estrogen receptor, which we found a long time ago. And the lymphoma, since there are multiple different types, and so we had a lead on lymphoma in finding those. And they are easier to find because these are liquid tumors and you can get enough cells. Solid tumors had been lagging behind, especially colon cancer. Now we have a breakthrough in those. Not only we are looking at the proteins on the cells, which we call receptors or markers, we look at a gene level to see what defect has happened, which had made that cancer, the cell cancerous. You can take an example of a book. A book is a person. Chapters are different organs. And each chapter is made of paragraphs, which are within that organ. There are different structures. Blood vessels are there. There is supporting structures there. And each word is a further cell in that, which is a building block, which is a brick. And each letter is a gene. So let's say if you are writing a book on a typewriter and the letter A gets messed up. So what it does is you when you type up the letter, the A is typing as an I. So that's a gene which has, I would say, mutated or changed, and the paragraph gets garbled. So there is the organ is diseased, and that's how the cancer develops, and those cells keep dividing. Now, if you understand that problem and you go back and fix that A, you haven't touched other letters. You haven't messed up rest of the paragraph. You don't have a big rubber to clean it, and you're not messing up other letters. You've just fixed the problem, and you avoided the side effects, and you got a targeted response and a better response. That's what I'm talking about, basically, how we treating this. So the problem is not just the letter gets misplaced. Sometimes there are multiple letters, so there are genes which get multiplied multiple times, or words, meaning changes, and paragraph changes. Basically, what that means is that there may be a protein which starts, the cell starts making too much, and they become immortal. Basically, they don't die. So you look at the mechanism, come up with the drugs just for that mechanism and treat it. In colon cancer, there's a drug which came along called cetuximab. The way it works, it looks for a certain mutation, the same way I would say that the one word, one letter got misplaced to another place. So mutation is basically equivalent to that. So what it does, it looks for that and fixes it. But what if that mutation has another component to it? So it's hiding behind something else. So it is changing, but it's changing to a sequence where your software is not recognizing it. So initially, they used this cetuximab on all colon cancer patients, and they found that it was beneficial. So most patients responded to it, but responses were not great. They knew the mechanism, how this works. So then they said, let's look at the cells itself and see that if somebody has that pathway blocked, that this drug is not able to find that abnormality, is it going to make the difference if we give people who have blocked and versus who not? And they did a clinical trial and came out that the people who had that pathway blocked through which this medication worked, it didn't work at all. So instead of giving it to let's say 100 people and finding out that 30 of them is not going to work, we now look for that mutation and decide if this chemo is going to work or not going to work. So we don't put somebody through a costly medication, side effects, and at the end of the day find out it didn't work, I need to give something else. So we stand a better chance in doing so.
In diagnosis, I think in terms of a person already has a known problem, maybe even they've had a biopsy of a mass, and then you're doing these tests on it to see what specific type of cancer it is. What about screening? Is there a role for this in screening in the future?
Sure. What I'm talking about is they looking at the cancer cells itself to find out what made them cancerous. So the screening would be helpful if the normal cells develop. So I need a cancer cells to do these testing. So the purpose of these are different. In screening, we can look at is there are blood tests we can do for screening. And the blood test can be, which we call tumor marker. These are the proteins which are secreted by cancer cells, which float in the body and we can find in the blood and find out if it's there or not. The problem is that these proteins are also made by some other cells as well. So, and some cancer cells may not make it. So theoretically, yes, we can find out cancer. If somebody has, let's say, example is a CEA, that's a protein which colon cancer cells make. I do a blood test on 100 people. Say, let's say somebody has protein sky high, that person most likely has a cancer, but rest of them were tested unnecessarily. Or some cancer cells are so deformed that they don't make enough of that protein. So we can give them a false reassurance and say, hey, you don't have a cancer, and in fact, that person may. So the problem is that even these cells have variability. So if already somebody had a cancer and I had a cancer cell, then they've already been diagnosed. There's another modality we are using, which right now we don't know exactly how to use because there are some issues with it in detection end, that how sensitive it is. We call it circulating tumor cells. So circulating means they're circulating in blood vessels. Tumor means they're coming from cancer, and these are the cells. So in somebody who already has a cancer, we know that they have a cancer, let's say breast cancer, and I'm treating them. So if I check their levels before I start the treatment, give them the chemo, check them levels after the treatment, we found that people whose levels come down significantly, they do much better than people whose level. So I can get, even before I do the scans, an indication of how that person is going to do. The problem with that is that sometimes these are not present in the system. So if somebody has a cancer, I check if they have a circulating tumor cells, then it's helpful. If somebody who I don't know if they have a cancer, they may or may not have it. So that's why it's not a fail-proof screening test. A screening test, to be good, has to be fail-proof, that I don't give a false assurance that they don't have a cancer to them, or I don't falsely tell them that they have a cancer and do the biopsy and find out they don't have it.
Okay. I want to follow up on this with one specific question, but we need to take a break right now. You are listening to Medically Speaking Radio, and we're talking about tumor markers and customized immunotherapy for cancer. We'll be back right after these messages. Since 1966, Sutter Auburn Faith Hospital has been providing award-winning care to members of the community, to people just like you. The tradition of excellence continues today with our comprehensive family birth center, cancer services, 24-hour emergency care, and a whole range of outpatient services with convenient hours and locations to serve you.
In addition, we've been recognized for excellence in managing heart attacks, heart failure, pneumonia, and surgical care. We are one of a select few hospitals in the state to earn recognition from VHA's West Coast region for sustained outstanding clinical performance.
To learn more about Sutter Auburn Faith Hospital, visit us on the web at sutterauburnfaith.org/medicallyspeakingradio. That's sutterauburnfaith.org/medicallyspeakingradio.
Sutter Health, with you for life.
This is Dr. Mark Vaughn. I want to tell you about my dentist, Rodney Kihara. His office is located right in town at High Street and Auburn Folsom Road. His staff is pleasant. They smile when you walk in, and you know who they are because they're there every time. We're talking about Flo, Cheryl, and Judy. Their pleasant faces welcome you into the office and let you know that you're in the right spot, a comfortable place to go to the dentist. Call Dr. Kihara's office at 888-1966. That's 888-1966.
The doctor would say, don't stick anything in your ear. Unless, of course, it's Medically Speaking. On K-High, the voice of the foothills. Now, back to Medically Speaking with Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney.
Welcome back to the Medically Speaking Radio. We are here with Gurvinder Shahid, our local oncologist from the North Cal Hematology Oncology Group right here in Auburn. And we're speaking about molecular techniques to identify specific cancers, to try to make custom therapies for them, and to characterize the cancers so that we better understand what a person's individual cancer is going to behave like. Mm-hmm. We, before the break, had talked about tumor markers, proteins circulating in the body that tend to go along with a particular cancer. I say tend to because, as you said before the break, this is not perfect.
So these tumor markers are the muddy footprints that the intruder leaves behind.
Muddy, yes. Is that a footprint? Is it from a Bigfoot? Is it from a person? Is it from a dog?
But Sometimes these footprints could be from your own pet as well. So that's why these are not very accurate.
There you go. He's with it with the analogies. Okay. Here's the one I was going to ask you about, because we talked about it last week on the show, and that's PSA, prostate-specific antigen. It is one of these markers.
Did you say prostate-specific anxiety?
That's right. That's what we talked about last week. Yeah, give us, from your perspective, a brief update of the status of PSA as a screening tool.
Sure. Here's another thing. For a long time, we were not able to do much with prostate cancer. So we had few treatments, and prostate cancer used to behave slowly in general population. And we used to say, okay, once a person hits 75, there's no point in checking it, because even if they develop a prostate cancer at that time, it might be something else which may kill them. So it wouldn't be a problem. Now, people are living longer. I have a patient who's 92 years old, and he's going on a cruise next week. So people are living longer, and we've also understood and found out, again, looking at these molecular levels, that some prostate cancers are aggressive, and they don't take years to change into something. So one thing I want to address is that it's now debatable and questionable that should we or should we not check PSA on somebody who's age 75. Another way of looking at it is look at what a person's life, how healthy the person is, what their lifestyle is, and may be helpful. Now, where the biggest controversy in PSA is that at what level is it significant? That's another problem. Now, being an oncologist, being a cancer doctor, I end up seeing folks who have cancer, and many of them have a PSA level of 3-4. Many of them had low level for a while, then it bumped up a little bit, and then they did the biopsy was done because it bumped up, and the person was concerned, and they did find a cancer. So the standard still is that if it's between 4 and up to 10, it's questionable. Some say 4 to 6, some say above 10, they should be biopsied. What we've learned in oncology field is we looked at the PSA doubling time. We found that if your PSA has doubled within 6 months, I'm much more worried in that person rather than somebody who had a PSA double in 2-3 years. So rather than looking at one level, get a baseline and do look at how fast it increases. So I found it more reliable. I have seen people who had a PSA of 2 and had very aggressive disease. Sometimes those cancer cells are so deformed, so aggressive, that they're not able to do the normal functions. And one of the normal functions for these cancer cells is making a PSA. So some cancers may be so aggressive that they don't make any PSA. I just saw a person an hour ago, very aggressive disease, had spread it out to the bones. PSA level is around 4. Mm. So there is no firm level which will give you 100% guarantee. But then again, you can't just keep biopsying everybody with PSA of 4. So you have to look in a clinical trial fashion to see, okay, if we do 100 biopsy, is there a meaningful number of people who will be helped with it, and I'm not unnecessarily putting rest of them through a procedure which has potential complications as well. So in the clinical trials, they still look at number needed to be treated, the total number who would benefit out of it, and is it significant enough. But there are individual variabilities. So listen to your body. So if you losing weight, you're tired, you have symptoms which you don't you can't explain, even if your PSA is low, but it's not normal, I mean, I would have to think twice. So it's a relatively controversial issue in a sense. If you talk to a medical oncologist, we are much more concerned. But if you look at if you talk to epidemiologist or public health people or people who come up with the policies, they have to look at a general population and come up with these guidelines. But there are individual variabilities. Everybody is different. And these, what we were talking about in colon cancer, everybody's cancer is different as well. So listening to your body. If you're healthy, no symptoms, doing good, more likely you don't have cancer.
So taking this into the realm of from diagnosis to treatment, how do we do that?
So let's take an example. We've been talking back in, quite a bit about colon cancer, so let's just pick that and give you an example. So let's say if I see a person with colon cancer and they already have a spread out disease. We used to say once a colon cancer spreads out, we cannot cure it. Not anymore. We can still cure it even if it's gone to the liver. If it goes beyond it, we still cannot cure it. And hopefully, and I'm pretty confident, pretty soon we will be, the way things are going in oncology. So that person is living longer and longer. I have colon cancer patients who are living years and years now. Unlike in old days, cancer used to be death sentence. So I know that that person's going to need treatment for long term. So, and eventually one chemo is going to stop working and I will have to use another chemo. Then another dilemma we have as an oncologist is, okay, there are two or three different drugs we can pick from. All of them have not been compared with each other, but all of them have good results. So which one should we pick based on side effects or results or something? So when I see a new patient with colon cancer and also with lung cancer and other cancers, I send their tissue, the cancer tissue, out for testing, and I get a report on that. It tells me about different enzymes they have or don't have. One of them is, let's say, DPD, which metabolizes certain chemo, fluorouracil. If you don't have that enzyme or it's a low level, the level of fluorouracil builds up and you have severe side effects. So if I have that information, I know that if I give them the regular dose, this person's going to have severe side effects rather than somebody else who had a normal level. So I either reduce the dose of that or I can pick up another chemo. The same way, there are certain genes which are more expressed. If they are more expressed, they may cause resistance to certain other chemos. So that helps me decide which chemo I need to pick at that time and which chemo is going to cause more side effects. So I have choices there to sequence my treatments. And this way, I can always have a sequence. Okay, this is most likely to be effective because of their chromosomal or genetic profile. And this one is going to have side effects. So I can pick the treatments and stand a better chance. So I can make educated guesses rather than doing that chemo for 3 months, doing the scan and finding out that it did not work or had more side effects and I had to change it.
Yeah, what you're advocating then or describing is a very most custom treatment for particular patients given their particular makeup and the type of cancer that they have. What implications does this have on patient comfort as far as, say, side effects, that kind of thing?
Sure. Now, again, taking an example of a fluorouracil, when I used to give it to the folks, some used to have severe mucositis. Mucositis is sores in the mouth, painful sores in the mouth. Another person used to sail through it, no problem with it. And when we used to advise people for chemotherapy or counsel them about chemotherapy, we used to say everybody is different. I don't know if you're going to have side, which way are you going to fall? Most folks don't have it. Some folks have it. I have no way of telling you if you will or you will not have a severe side effect from this. And it's difficult for that person to make a decision if they should go through that chemotherapy or not because I didn't give them a specific. So you're kind of playing a guessing game. You're gambling. So you're gambling on that maybe I will have side effects, maybe I will not have. With this information in hand, I can tell them, okay, your level of that enzyme is this much, and I anticipate that you may have 50% more side effects, 25%. So you're gambling, but you have you're doing inside trading here. So you have more information to help that person decide if they should or should not go through chemotherapy, and for me to choose that chemotherapy. If I have another equally good option, I wouldn't even pick that chemotherapy. So I would go with the other one. So that's how it will be helpful for that person.
So that describes the customizing what sounds like traditional chemotherapy according to the molecular behavior of the person's cancer. But how does the vaccine strategy complement this?
Yes, that's a good question. So this is basically looking at what we have and how which person is the right candidate or person to give that chemo to. Taking it to the next step, you start from the scratch. You start from the scratch is you look at that cancer cells and going back to, again, lymphoma model, you look at that, so they find a protein on the lymphoma cell called CD20. I don't know who picked that name. So what that protein initially did was help us identify that cell. Then they thought, okay, now we have an identifier on this cell. So what if we develop something which attaches to it and kills that cell? And what attaches to the cells and identifies the proteins to attack is the vaccines. So they took that principle of vaccine. So what they do is they take mouse or horse and inject them with those lymphoma cells, not from that person, but generalized, which has that CD20 protein. So that horse or mouse immune system makes antibodies to it. Antibodies are basically, that's what vaccine does, gives your immune system a product to fight against. So we take that serum back, refine it, partially make it human protein so that people don't have that much allergic reaction, and give it to the person with the lymphoma who has CD20 protein. And what this does is it goes in the body, finds those CD20, and it's like a magnet. So it attaches to it, and it is an antibody, and it kills that cell. So you are using a targeted therapy, a smart bomb, to kill the cancer cell. And so in doing so, you're avoiding the normal cell. So it doesn't affect the normal cell. It doesn't cause hair loss, doesn't cause sores in the mouth, doesn't cause any of the traditional side effects we have from the chemo. The biggest side effect with this medication is allergic reaction because it's a protein, it's a vaccine. And that's manageable, that's controllable. And we're getting good results. And using it along with the traditional chemotherapies, we've improved the survival of folks. Now, we've taken that actually one step further. What they did is they have this similar molecule, antibody. They attached a radioactive particle to it. So, and the physicist calculates the radiation to it, calculates how far what the diameter of the radiation is, and depending upon the tumor, they calculate the dose. So now this protein is used to find that cell, attaches to it, kills it with the antibody mechanism, but it's piggybacking on itself that radioactive particle. And so it's causing the kill around it, and we can control that kill around it so we can have a better effect. And it's already being used, and it's been in use for more than 2 years now, actually, 3-4 years, actually.
So it's essentially on the molecular level, a dirty bomb inside of the body.
It's a smart bomb.
It's targeted.
You were describing that with putting in the antibodies that are already made in the horse or the mouse. Now that's a...
I was a little concerned about that. Concerned about that as a side effect. Would the patient start craving alfalfa or anything like that? You haven't had that happen.
They remodify it to humanize it. It's partially monoclonal antibodies.
Yeah, the serum sickness, does that come from using these?
No, not with these. It's very refined, yes.
Okay. But you're giving them already made antibodies, which is passive immunity. So that only goes so far as whatever you gave them. So you have to keep redosing it. Is there such thing as active immunity where you get their body to make the antibodies itself and your B cells to keep making new antibodies?
That's actually... hasn't been refined yet. That principle is being looked at in melanoma. That's being looked at, as we just talked about, prostate cancer, where you train your own white cells to keep fighting your own cancer cell. The problem with this is that our immune cells have a large turnover. You train them, there are new cells, you have to keep training them. So, but I'm very optimistic that one day we will train our bodies such that they will be able to really kill these cancer cells, and we will be winning this race for cure in cancer. Overall, oncology, the way it's going is we are going more and more targeted. We are going more and more using the products which are more safer and with less side effects and better results. The problem we are finding right now is that, going back to the same example I gave before of a book and the letter being misplaced or mistyped being a problem, and you try to fix that, is that the dominant pathway? Are we missing that this paragraph is also missing a period somewhere as well? So sometimes the cancers has multiple pathway. You block one pathway, and they may find another dominant pathway. So that's why we give that treatment for a while, and the cancer learns to bypass that pathway and comes around and starts growing again, and then we have to change the chemo. Where more research is going and where the direction is now is finding multi-targeted drugs, and some of them we are already using. So you attack two pathways. First is you have to understand it. So you say, okay, which are the dominant pathways? You come up with the dominant pathway in certain cancer, and then you come up with a drug which blocks all the dominant pathways so you get a better cell kill. And that's how we're going to win this battle.
Okay. We do need to take a break here. We do want to remind you that this is Medically Speaking Radio on AM 950 KHI, the voice of the foothills, and we're speaking with Dr. Gurvinder Shahid. We'll be back right after this. This is Dr. Mark Vaughn. I wanted to let you know a little bit about our practice at the Auburn Medical Group. The physician, nurses, and front desk personnel all approach the patient, asking themselves the question, how would I want to be treated if I was in the patient's shoes? Listen to what one of our patients has to say about her experience at the Auburn Medical Group.
My name is Susie Brown. I just want to sincerely thank that group of people for being there for me in some emergency situations. They are very efficient. Their staff, including their receptionist, even when you call her, she's got sympathy and compassion for you. And when you're ill, that's what you need. The nurse staff is wonderful, and Dr. Vaughn listens to everything you say, and they just get on things. They do not let anything lag.
If you need a doctor, call us at 886-8630 or look at our website at auburnmedicalgroup.com.
Hello, this is attorney Max Beeman. I specialize in frivolous lawsuits, and I've never lost a case. You heard me right. I've never lost a case, and I've done hundreds. No case too frivolous. Was your coffee too hot? Was your soup too cold? Did the traffic signals make you miss an important appointment? I get big awards for my clients in cases just like these. In these tough economic times, you can't afford not to sue. Winning a lawsuit can change your life, and I can make that happen. Call me, Max Beeman, 916-384-0237. 916-384-0237.
Now, back to Medically Speaking with Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney.
Welcome back from the break. We are speaking on Medically Speaking Radio here with Dr. Gurvinder Shahid, speaking about chemotherapy. And I guess a good way to describe it is, this ain't your grandma's chemo. We were talking a little bit about avoiding side effects before the break. What are some of the elements of this type of therapy, both the vaccine type therapy and the customized chemotherapy, as relates to side effects?
Sure. The traditional chemotherapy, think about it as a shotgun approach. So you take a shotgun, you shoot, and you kill a few other things as well. So it affects the brain, it causes nausea, causes vomiting, hair loss. So you kind of killing all the dividing cells. You're not specifying, I'm going to kill just these cells. With the targeted therapy, you're just attacking the cancer cell. You're sparing everything else. So that's where the side effects are different. With the newer medications, most of them. There may be individual variabilities, but most of them don't have nausea, don't have vomiting, don't have hair loss, don't drop your blood counts where you get at risk of infections or you develop anemia where you're tired. Some people do get a little bit of body aches because it feels like an immunotherapy. It's in a vaccine-like therapy. Some people have allergic reaction. And most of the times, if allergic reaction is going to happen, it happens in our office when we are actually actively infusing that medication. Doesn't happen when you go home. So those are the major side effects. And again, depending upon different drugs, there may be some more. But with immunotherapy, those are the side effects. And these are, and this way, I'm able to give it to folks who traditionally would not have even gotten the chemotherapy and the cancer would have progressed. So I'm able to control disease in those folks as well.
You say people who would not even have gotten chemotherapy? Who are these people you're talking about?
In old days, people used to say, okay, we used to say, somebody's above 75, I'm not going to give chemo. But have you seen 75-year-old person lately? He's probably healthier than I am. So the numbers have changed. So now I look at a person and see how active they are. And actually, we have different scoring systems we use. One of them is ECOG scoring system. And we look at is zero means they're perfectly healthy, doing everything they're doing. One is they're mildly tired. Two is they spend 50% or so time in bed. Most of the time, they're sicker. Three is 50%, and four is most of the time. So depending upon, rather than looking at the age, I look at how functional they are, how healthy they are, and see, if somebody was very ill, in a sense, in old days, I wouldn't have been able to give them any treatment. The problem here is, let's say, if your cancer is making you ill, I can't give you the treatment because you're too ill, you're not going to get better. So to make you better, I need to treat your cancer because cancer is making you ill. So that's where these things are helpful, that even if somebody is feeling weak, very tired, and are not able to be treated with traditional chemotherapy because I'm worried that they'll get admitted to the hospital and they'll have bad quality of life, that I'm able to control their disease and in a hope that once I control their disease, they will start feeling better. So that's what I meant, that traditionally I was not able to, and now I'm able to help those folks.
So these treatments are moving away from that old adage about the treatment being worse than the disease itself. What have you seen in terms of success as these kinds of treatments?
If you look at the statistics at national level, almost in every cancer, we are doing better and better. The life expectancy or survival, you say 5-year survival or 10-year survival, has significantly improved in almost all cancers. Another example is if you come to my office, you would see people who have had cancer many years ago, breast cancer, spread out cancer. It's not uncommon to find folks who had 5-year, 10 years, and still going about their job. I can give you another example is I just saw a person today who I saw about 3 years ago with lung cancer, which is the deadliest cancer around. A 5-year survival in all comers, stage 1, which is very localized, and stage 4, which is spread out, 5-year survival is around 16%. In early stage, it's 50%. But the problem is only 15% we find early stage. So that person had a cancer spread out all over the body. He had it in the bones. He had a compression fracture. He had it in the lungs. He had it in other organs as well. So I treated him with chemotherapy for about 7 to 8 months. And for last 2 years or so, he's not had any chemotherapy and his scans have been clean. So if I have to quote somebody the statistics are totally different. No chemo, 6 months, chemo, 24 months. So those statistics we are beating, but there is individual variability. There may be somebody who has such an aggressive disease that they don't even make the statistics but there are folks who are totally different. And that's where these molecular testings come in.
And if I can ask, what was the age of your patient, the one that you just
He described? Is 76.
Well, then, I, that explains your earlier statement that, you know, have you seen a 75-year-old lately? Probably healthier than you.
That's true. I saw somebody 4 years ago. She was 84. She had an ovarian cancer which was spread out all over the body. I was very reluctant in treating her, but she insisted, and she was relatively okay. I was a little bit concerned, but she was okay. So I watched her carefully, treated her. When you have a spread out cancer, sometimes you have to keep treating. I treated her for about 18 months. And by that time, she had no evidence of cancer anywhere. Then she was developing other problems with age. She had bad heart. She was diabetic. She had atrial fibrillation. So she had other problems as well, and she was having difficulty controlling that. A couple of times she was admitted for her heart condition, and the cancer was so controlled. And I said, let's stop the chemo because you are sick. Let's take care of your other problems. And since then, I haven't given her chemo. And called her other day, and she's still alive and kicking, and cancer's still under control. So things have changed.
Okay. Any final questions or for Dr. Shahid that you have on the subject? I guess the one last thing I would want to bring out in this new era of chemotherapy is a cost comparison to what we used to do as far as the testing necessary to do this, because we have to do a lot of pathology and marker testing. And then if the treatments are any different, like the vaccine, do you have any kind of rough estimates on cost comparison?
Yes. Actually, the insurance companies are paying for these testing. The reason for that is rather than having to give somebody these expensive chemotherapies and after 3 months finding out it didn't work, they are using these as a tool to see that they're avoiding unnecessary costs in this. Drugs are expensive. They are very expensive. The medication we were talking about in prostate cancer, recently there was an article, there was a debate in the newspaper saying that is the cost justifying its benefit? At this point, probably not. But you have to talk to the person who has a cancer. Does it make a difference if he lives 3 months extra, 4 months extra, or even 1 month extra? Also, you have to look at is that this is a one step in the right direction. When these initially came around, these were expensive and the benefit was very marginal. So unless we take that step, we're not going to refine it and we're not going to fine tune and win this battle. So these are necessary steps sometimes to learn about the disease and go further. Costs are expensive. It's like a prototype. You come up with a prototype, it's expensive, it's a good car, it goes to the market, you go into mass production, and the cost will come down, and you will get better results.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Shahid, for being on our show again. We look forward to having you again in the future, speaking on other topics related to hematology and oncology.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Larry. Thanks for having me.
And we want to remind our listeners that they can find out more information on our shows on our website, which is www.medicallyspeakingradio.com. They can also become fans on Facebook. Although you don't fan anything more now, you like things. You can like us and be ready to call in the coming weeks. We won't be live next week, but we will be the week after that. I don't know the date off the top of my head, but 2 weeks from today. And as always, this is Dr. Vaughn, Larry, and this week Dr. Shahid telling all of you to stay in good health. This is Dr. Mark Vaughn. I wanted to let you know a little bit about our practice at the Auburn Medical Group. The physician, nurses, and front desk personnel all approach the patient, asking themselves the question, how would I want to be treated if I was in the patient's shoes? Listen to what one of our patients has to say about her experience at the Auburn Medical Group.
My name is Susie Brown. I just want to sincerely thank that group of people for being there for me in some emergency situations. They are very efficient. Their staff, including their receptionist, even when you call her, she's got sympathy and compassion for you. And when you're ill, that's what you need. The nurses, the nurse staff is wonderful, and Dr. Vaughn listens to everything you say, and they just get on things. They do not let anything lag.
If you need a doctor, call us at 886-8630 or look at our website at auburnmedicalgroup.com.